The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
A warm welcome to all of you on the line. It is truly a pleasure to welcome to Asian Investing Summit 2021 returning MOI Global Instructor Peter Kennan. Peter is the founder of Black Crane Capital, which he started in 2009. He was a leading corporate financier with UBS Asia Pacific. Prior to that, has a total of more than 25 years of investment and corporate finance experience across a diverse range of sectors and transactions. As I'm sure many of you will appreciate by now, Peter has shared some truly differentiated ideas with us in the past. We've been fortunate to benefit from his insights annually, and I dare say it's become a tradition by now. Peter, looking over the thesis summary for your idea today, I am very much looking forward to the presentation. It sounds like a very compelling case. So let's get right into it. I will turn it to you now. Please go ahead.
Thanks, John. I'm very happy to be here again. It must be getting close to 10 years now, maybe 8 years. So let's see if we can get to the decade. But thanks again and welcome to everyone. Today's idea that I'd like to present is called Sky Television, which is in effect the, it's based in New Zealand and it's in effect the B Sky B of New Zealand. So it's a pay TV, satellite pay TV business with very strong content, established position in the New Zealand market. So just moving to the overview, it's the Sky TV is the number one pay TV provider in New Zealand. Its key content is New Zealand rugby. So they have recently signed for another 5 years with New Zealand rugby. And that's the All Blacks, which is a key content for them. The sports content in New Zealand is not on free to air. So if rugby fans want to watch the All Blacks and rugby with New Zealand rugby generally, they need to have a Sky TV subscription. And that's been a key driver for them building their business. It was founded in 1990 and listed on the New Zealand Stock Exchange in 97. For a period of time, News Corp was the a major shareholder, but not founders of the business. They bought the business from the founders, though they exited in the mid to late 90s, and it became just an open register. This is a company with an open register. Obviously, the business model is in transition with streaming and the direct models, over-the-top services, as people call it, which is a very different business model, obviously. And B Sky B in the UK, who's in a very similar situation with a satellite network with exclusive content to the Premier Football League, they had the same issues and they made their transition though earlier than Sky TV, and B Sky B made that transition very successfully and was eventually bought out by Comcast, paying about 15 times EBITDA for the business. And the real transition is what around technology and delivery, so embracing the streaming world, but also more importantly, these businesses that had monopolistic networks or effectively monopolies ended up being in situations where they were competitive businesses, and that was a whole change in mindset. And Sky TV did not handle that well, and they were increasing charges on the subscription. They hadn't marketed very well. They weren't particularly well liked. And that was a similar case to B Sky B until they changed strategy. Then Sky waited too late and ended up having declining revenues, and that led to the company being heavily discounted. The company also had some legacy debt, which meant they were over-leveraged as well. And then COVID hit, which meant more pressure on revenue, more pressure on refinancing, and the company ended up in a major refinancing event about 12 months ago now, so April, May. Almost 12 months ago, May, June last year, where they did a very large rights issue and paid off all their debt. So they're now basically, they are debt-free. Management changed about 2 years ago, 18 months ago. Ex-B Sky B people who came in to really renovate the Sky TV business using the B Sky B model. And that was all about listening to the customers, breaking up the bundle of the package so people could buy sport, buy movies separately, listening to their customers, what do they want, embracing streaming, building a streaming business. And that process is partway through. The hard yards have been done. A lot of cost has been cut, as well as the change on the customer side and the product side of things. And they've moved the business forward now to a stage where we've moved from significant earnings uncertainty to stabilization of the number of pay TV subscribers, and I'll come to this later. And that, for me, is the most important point in this investment thesis, is can they stabilize the satellite network and satellite revenues? And if they can, as we've seen in other geographies, the satellite has a long tail to it, meaning people who are used to using the satellite service just like it, they're used to it, and the tail is quite long and it's very cash generative. And streaming is lower margin, it is growing, yes, but the real value here is in this long tail of satellite revenues. And the fact that they are in New Zealand, which is a smaller market, not everybody will want to go direct to market. And one of the key things around their strategy is to get the direct to market people onto their platform. So they're using the Sky Network platform, albeit Sky has to share a lot of the margin with them. They're using the Sky platform to get access to the customer base. And so Sky TV is connected to, in total customers represent about two-thirds of the Australian, of the New Zealand households. Their actual satellite TV connections are about a third of New Zealand households. So it's very, very well spread there. No one else can really offer the coverage to New Zealand that they can. And so the strategy is to make sure they have access to all the content, some exclusive, some not necessarily exclusive, but at least have the access. Cut deals with people who want to go direct. So there's potential in the future for New Zealand Rugby, if they really, really feel they have to go direct to customers, that they share those rights. But the main thing is that all the content is on this platform, and this platform is in most people's homes. It's a lot of people really used to using it, and it becomes a very strong franchise business. The valuation is super discounted at the moment. So you'll see some numbers just here where EBITDA at the moment is difficult to get a gauge on, because looking at the historicals, because one, it's been coming down with revenues coming down, and the COVID period was tricky because it was good for the company in that they lost some revenues, but they were also able to reduce their content costs because live sport was not being undertaken, and the savings they got on content more than offset the loss in revenue. So they actually had a lift in EBITDA in the recent half period, half on half. On the go forward, their EBITDA is about $140 million per annum, and we think that's about the bottom. They have to take off some satellite lease charges beyond that to get to about $100 million of operating free cash flow, and about $50 million after take off $50 million annualized capex. And this is on a market cap of $314 million. So very strong cash generation as a percent of market cap. And because there's no net debt, it's actually net cash of $22 million, enterprise value is effectively the same as the market cap. And we think that $50 million grows to $60, $70, $80 million over the next 3, 4, 5 years. And so we think it's a very compelling story. This slide simply just outlines the scope of how dominant they are in content in New Zealand. There really is nobody else that's even comparable. I think the key competitor to them is probably, or potential competitors, are the telcos in New Zealand. So there's the old Telecom New Zealand, now called Spark. They launched a movie streaming business. It wasn't successful. Sky bought their movie streaming business and merged it because the technology was interesting for them. So that saw Sky exit movies. Spark exit movies. Spark also launched a sports streaming business that is still operating, though it's now been there's now a wholesale deal whereby Spark can sell the Sky sport content alongside their own sport content. So it looks like Spark may exit the sports streaming business in the not too distant future, or at least have a sensible arrangement whereby they don't cut each other's throats and they share content. Vodafone is the other operator in this major telco in the New Zealand market. It's no longer owned by Vodafone, it's owned by a private equity group. They have an arrangement with Sky where Sky provides them with their streaming product, and they rename that as Voda TV. So it's a strategy where Sky's adopted a strategy where, you know, they don't have to absolutely dominate, they need to be dominant, but they can reach agreements with others such that it's very difficult for them to be replaced by anybody. Share price, you can see the share price performance from $2.50 all the way down to current share price of 18 cents. The rights issue last year in June period was 13 cents. It's trading a little bit above the rights price, but still a lot of upside to go. Obviously, one of the risks with some of the investments we make in the small mid-cap space is that once they get discarded by the market for a reason, in this case, obviously, leverage plus declining revenues, it takes a while for the market to come back and reassess them. And so Sky is in that, we're now in that period where a bit of patience is required. The satellite revenues have only just stabilised. I think people want to see that happen for another half. They want to see that happen in a non-COVID period as well, perhaps. So I think it's going to take maybe a number of halves of continuing good performance before the stock really wakes up and responds properly. The register is, we'll come to this later, is really, it has a supportive register, but it needs to get more mainstream before we get broader share market support. This slide is delving into a bit more detail about the stabilisation in revenue decline, which I think is the key thing around the thesis. This is what everyone is looking at. And it's not only, so there's two components, obviously, to the revenue. There's the number of subscribers, and there's the ARPU, the average revenue per user per month. And you can see these numbers clearly starting to stabilise, though you need to dig into some of the part year details and sort of the one-off effects in first half FY21 to really see what's happening. And this is what this chart now does. And here, there was an arrangement whereby Vodafone was reselling the Sky service. They've stopped doing that. And that was a very logical outcome from one of Sky's big initiatives is a rollout in broadband, and I'll come to that in a minute. And so that made, so they became a competitor with Vodafone and with Spark for broadband customers. So Sky's rollout is very much targeted at selling a broadband service that's good for video and for high quality streaming and video, slightly different to a regular telco broadband product. However, it made that wholesaling arrangement with Vodafone something that didn't make sense for either party. And so if you look at these numbers here, you'll see the total customers still coming down. But if you extrapolate, they had a one-off loss of customers from the ending of that wholesale agreement. So when they ended the wholesale agreement, they converted most of the customers to direct, but there was a loss. And if you take that loss out, the customer numbers have effectively been stabilised. And if you look at the chart across to the right, you'll see in the final set of boxes there, you'll see there's 10,000 disconnections of resellers. I'm not sure if you can see my mouse circling that. Then customer additions was 25 and customer losses was 25, so net churn of zero. So that's a very good thing to see. And you'll see if you go back to 2017, they were disconnections of 20, they're certainly having adding 25,000 customers, but having 49,000 disconnections. Okay. Then a little digging into streaming, you'll see this is sort of total Sky customers here. So they're growing total customers because streaming is growing. You'll see Lightbox Wholesale Lightbox was the streaming, movie streaming business that Spark TV, or Spark founded. And so these numbers are flattered by one-off acquisition of Lightbox customers. However, sort of underlying growth rate of about 17% after excluding that effect. And so that's quite significant. The actual revenue effect is less significant, as you'll see here, the revenue numbers. There's a business with total revenues that are much larger than these numbers here. So 36 million in the first half, so annualized, that's about 70 million. Well, annualized total revenue is about 700. So, but I think the important thing to remember here is that as these are growing, if you look at the net free cash flow to shareholders, it's currently sitting at about $50 million, even $5 million, $10 million of extra streaming revenue makes a big difference to the bottom line for shareholders. And that's across a largely, in the short run, content costs are fixed, so a lot of fixed costs, so a lot of operating leverage in the business. So the turnaround strategy, I've talked about it a little bit, but I'll go into a bit more detail here. So develop and grow a full suite of streaming products, and that's been done, and that's starting to show up in the numbers. The streaming has also been successful in that Spark has chosen not to compete on movie streaming, and so these guys are now one of the dominant streamers of movies in New Zealand. Develop some local content. It's not a big part of the story, but it's important. They do produce the sport that they show. They have news shows, they have sports interview shows, etc. And that's important in the local market. They continue to dominate sports content. That will continue, the All Blacks, for another 5 years. And then the important thing is when that renewal comes up, some people talk to me a little bit about, well, what's the renewal risk? What happens if they lose the rugby? Well, there's no one else that could really buy the rugby and afford to pay what they can afford to pay. They also have a great database and really understand their customers and have the best data on what is what are New Zealand households in their various different segments prepared to pay for what particular pieces of content. And it's the accuracy of them being able to, that's their key skill of getting that right, paying the right amount for the content. And once you become, as they are, the monopoly platform where it's a platform that everyone needs to be on if they want to get to all New Zealanders, it's pretty hard to get displaced. The distribution partnerships with the telecom operators are already in place, and greater product customization is what they've already started to do as well. And the third part to this is actually to start to move into the broadband market so they can bundle broadband with the pay TV product. And that's something that BSkyB did in the UK, and it's something they've just launched. And we think it's obviously defensive in the sense that it helps to lower churn and retain customers, but we also think it can be quite a material part of revenue and margin going forward and provide growth. And just a bit of background on the broadband market in New Zealand. New Zealand has a fibre to the home rollout that covers about 85% of New Zealand households. We were, about a year ago, invested in that business that did that. It was a government partnership between the old Telecom New Zealand network. It was a listed company called Chorus that had a government partnership, and Chorus was the old Telecom New Zealand network business. And so there was a fibre to the home network, and that's access to that network is governed by competition regulation, so it's open access. And that's the product that Sky resell in a bundle. The pay TV product. Major shareholders, Jupiter is a value investor based in the UK. The New Zealand Accident Compensation Commission is the second largest institutional investor in New Zealand. It's a government entity that has a long track record of very sensible value-based investing. A Perpetual, Australian fund manager, Vanguard, New Zealand rugby small shareholding that was arranged as part of the last rights negotiation, and we have a 5.2% share. So valuation, I think the best way to value this business is on a free cash flow yield, ultimate free cash flow yield. And you'll see here that if free cash flow is in the range of $70 to $80 million per annum, that translates to a 50 to 70 cent share price. I think that's a fairly solid metric to use. Obviously, EBITDA multiples these days with the leasing changes and accounting standards becoming worth even less than they were before. Depreciation doesn't really matter so much in this business because it's looking to historical expenditures, which may or may not really occur. In terms of CapEx, there's a CapEx guidance of about $50 million per annum. They think they can manage within that guidance. They are going to start to roll out a new box, a replacement box. It won't go to all customers. It will be on a needs basis or a customer interest basis. Some customers in the past have liked to stay with old boxes. So the rollout of new boxes is necessary, but in a controlled fashion across over an extended period of time. And so that's not going to be a one-off hit. It can be contained in that CapEx window. And I think as revenue goes, CapEx will go up a bit as well. So, but the sort of the broad CapEx guidance is about 7 or 8% of total revenue. So CapEx is under control. We don't see any risk there. Balance sheet very strong. There are some surplus assets in the balance sheet, property in particular, that we could yield $20, $30 million, which is probably going to be used to buy back shares. But otherwise, the balance sheet's pretty clean. Well, it is clean. And that's the end of the presentation. So I'd like to open it up for questions, John.
Peter, thank you so much for the compelling case you just outlined. You mentioned share buybacks there toward the end. Can you just elaborate a little bit more on capital allocation going forward? So we have a, you know, strong free cash flow generation here. You know, how much of that do you think will go to dividends, and how much into the business, and how much do you think will be available for buybacks?
Okay, thanks, John. It's something I probably should have mentioned. New Zealand's a very strong dividend market, and the company have said, obviously in COVID it's a bit difficult because there's still, you know, uncertainty around cost of sports rights, how much sport will be played, and part of it, there is about $50 million per annum of advertising revenue, which has obviously been hard hit during COVID. There's also another 34, almost 50 as well actually, of revenue from commercial premises, so that's hotels and, you know, pubs and clubs, where they have a, you know, a professional subscription, so they can show sport in bars and hotel rooms. So the company has said that they will revisit. I think clearly dividends are on the agenda, that they don't want to set a payout policy in dividend until sort of the COVID dust clears, and so I think that means sort of early next year. Which would be at the end of the first half financial year 2022. So that would be for regular dividends. Okay. Now clearly, and we would expect the policy would be to pay out most of this free cash flow. We would hope that that's the policy. The CapEx envelope has been talked about in terms of, you know, percent of revenue. There may be opportunity. The only sort of big capital opportunity that one might worry about was if they decided maybe they should own a mobile business. But I think that's more likely to be in the form of you know, a partnership or a virtual network. And the key rollout of key potential CapEx risk is on these boxes, so the new Sky boxes. However, that's manageable in terms of amount. So their CapEx window of sort of 7 or 8% of revenue, which at the moment equates to about $50 million, sounds about right to me. And so most of this sort of, you know, $50 million dividend flow and growing is about where we see it. In terms of buybacks, obviously with the stock price where it is, we would prefer to see them devote the cash in the short run to some buybacks. So that's where the sale of the surplus property comes in, and also they're free cash flow generative right now today. So between now and February next year, that's not a $50 million of free cash flow. So with $70 million and a $300 million market cap, they could buy back a lot of shares. So we hope to see them do both.
That's very helpful. Thank you. Could you talk just a little bit more about the rights offering that happened, why it was necessary to, I guess, do such a large rights offering, and were you part of that?
Yeah, so we took up our full allocation of rights. So we didn't buy any stock until post-COVID, which was very fortunate, because and the original plan was for them to sell some surplus property and to refinance their debt. It was a bond that came due. It was about 100 million Kiwi dollars, and they had scope under their bank facilities to pay that bond out, so stay levered. Obviously, the uncertainty around COVID made that more difficult and more challenging, and the capital markets were quite volatile at the time. So a refinance of the bond amongst retail investors wasn't possible. And also just the market, stock market, you know, reputation of the company wasn't great at that point and still slowly, you know, still recovering. So the board took a very conservative decision and raised a lot of money, more than we would have thought necessary or hoped. Yeah, it is what it is. We took up our rights. It's not unusual to see that in Australia and New Zealand in particular. Was, you know, the capital markets guys and the banks tend to, typically they're able to spook boards around, you know, directors' duties, a risk to the company, et cetera. And so you tend to have more dilutive capital raisings than if you had a controlling shareholder. So it was a set of those dynamics that really led to the big capital issuance. Now it's done, we've got the benefit of that, which is less risk and a lot of free cash flow. And what I've been impressing on the chairman and the CEO is that the quid pro quo of having done that is that you need to get on with really active capital management and use the balance sheet to your advantage, as in buybacks and dividends.
And the rights offering price was how much?
13 cents.
Mm-hmm. Peter, I'm just curious, the Sky brand, how does that work globally? Over here in Switzerland, we have a Sky as well, Sky Sports and so forth. Can you just explain that? Is there some kind of a... Who owns that brand, and then do royalties or licenses need to be paid?
There was an interim period where there was some royalty payments going back 10 years. But now, you know, Sky New Zealand own the rights to that Sky brand in New Zealand outright in perpetuity.
Understood. And so there's...
And I think the Sky... And the Sky you see in Switzerland is, I assume, is Comcast, is Sky UK.
Mm-hmm. So geographically, there's no competition that can happen between Sky brands, like Sky Australia isn't going to come into New Zealand or anything like that?
No. So Sky Australia is sort of linked in with Foxtel, which is sort of a joint venture between News Corp. And Telstra, which is the incumbent telco company in Australia. So so that Sky brand has been sort of separated in those different jurisdictions.
Interesting. In terms of the sports rights, is the New Zealand rugby, I guess, about 5 years from now, is that the biggest renewal? That's worth looking.
Then cricket, there's internet. So Sky have international cricket, Spark have local domestic cricket, which is much lower value. So by, I think the domestic cricket was worth maybe $15 million per annum, while the rugby was worth $100 million per annum. Gives you a proportion as to a feel for how important that is. Then some of the other thought that's important is Formula One, Australian Supercars, which is an Australian car racing thing. There will be a little bit with local Australian Rugby League out of Australia, but they're all relatively minor compared to rugby league, rugby union, or the All Blacks, which is pretty close to a religion in New Zealand.
Right. The shares are listed both in Australia and New Zealand. Is that right? Ticker SKT.
Yeah, that's not uncommon for the larger New Zealand companies. And that sort of harks back to the day when it was a much bigger company. It was certainly top 50 stock in New Zealand, you know, going back a bit. And so one of the things that I like about this story is that I think the stock, the capital markets risk of it is relatively low. And by that, I mean, it's a company with a profile, obviously a brand that every New Zealander knows and knows well. So it has a very good chance once revenues are stabilised, dividends are stabilised, of becoming a well-owned stock in retail land and on everyone's radar screen.
Are there other notable streaming plays in New Zealand that are, you know, publicly listed, maybe pure plays or anything that, you know, if let's say, as you mentioned, retail investors wanted to invest in streaming 3 years from now, what would be their choices, I guess?
None that I'm aware of. In terms of the actual streaming market, Netflix has had the biggest impact in New Zealand, Amazon much less so. Disney Plus has just started, HBO Max not yet started, and and HBO Max may well come through the Sky platform. So HBO Max in the UK is on the Skybox, Sky Video Box, the Skybox, which is a revenue sharing deal. So probably a similar thing will happen in New Zealand, I would imagine. So there's not really, not that I'm aware of, any mainstream streaming alternative other than the multinational ones or the global operators.
How do you feel about satellite TV longer term as a technology, I guess, because it seems like streaming can just come over the internet. Do you really need a satellite in the long term?
Not in the long term, but what's been shown is that these businesses have a long tail to them. So the product's quite different. So, you know, across a satellite and box setup, you have linear TV, you know, there's actually a timetable. And you then have a recorder and you set the recorder to record your favorite shows and it just banks them all up. So you can get onto your Skybox and sort of say, okay, well, my favorite show is it. Yeah, I've got my 10-5 favorite shows or whatever, and I just go to the most recent episode of each of them that I haven't watched. That's what I watch. So a lot of people use the Skybox in that mode, and they're used to doing that. And you've also got all the content in one place with one subscription. So I think there's an element of people quite like that. And once they've been used to paying $70 per month or $80 per month, $90 per month, you know, they're not going to turn their life upside down trying to save $5 or $10 per month by trying to work out which three streaming platforms they should subscribe to that gives them the same effective content. And this is for older people, obviously. Teenagers and young adolescents are different, the way they consume media. And so whilst people who still have been used to consuming their content in that fashion still living, which is another 30 or 40 years, I think there's going to be people who want to be on satellite.
Well, certainly with the free cash flow yield that's being offered right now, we don't necessarily have to worry about the next 20, 30 years.
As long as it's around for another 10 years. But if they've stabilized those numbers, that's the key, I think. That's what people really want to see. And the profitability of the streaming product is just as profitable as the satellite for Sky. So they're somewhat indifferent as people cross over.
Right. I guess it's all about the content and having value in that subscription.
Yes, exactly.
What are the key data points to watch going forward to gauge how this thesis is playing out on the operating side, I guess?
Yeah, it's the satellite revenues, or what they call the Skybox revenue. So Skybox numbers of subscribers and the ARPU and the churn statistics associated with that.
Great. Yeah. Well, I've been trying to poke holes into this, but it seems like a very compelling case when you have those kinds of free cash flow attributes. And I guess, you know, a lot will depend on what they do with the free cash flow, but it sounds like there's a good chance of shareholders seeing some of that cash flowing back, which would be very nice.
Yes, yes, no, I agree, John. I think that's the thing. We will hold the chairman and the CEO's feet to the fire.
Yeah, I mean, not that they suddenly go out paying up for content or, you know, trying to transform themselves completely.
Exactly. It's not a growth business, right? I mean, it's and they shouldn't try to be a growth business. Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. Great. Well, Peter, thank you so much for another compelling case. Certainly something for our members to look into. Truly appreciate you taking the time to be with us again this year.
My pleasure, John. It's always a pleasure to be on.
And thank you all for listening. Goodbye for now.